From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
The opening pages of Timothy Packren's about-to-be-released cookbook aren't pictures of plates of food, but rather gorgeous flower photos, some dreamy cosmos, followed by a double-page spread of silvery mountain mint or pycnanthemum, gleaming against a moody, dark background. That all makes sense because the cookbook is titled Garden Variety, plant-focused recipes inspired by my garden, and his garden is a color and flavor-filled space in his New Orleans backyard with 12 big raised beds that he's now transitioning to what he calls more of a food forest. More in a moment about that garden and the ingredients Timothy grows and cooks with there, but first, these messages.
Underwriting support for A Way to Garden provided by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulbs, a third-generation bulb company offering top-size flower bulbs directly to landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners on the web, colorblends.com. And by High Mowing Seeds, Wolcott, Vermont, professional quality vegetable, flower, and herbal seeds that are 100% organic and non-GMO project verified. On the web, highmowingseeds.com. And by White Flower Farm, offering a wide range of carefully selected and expertly grown garden plants. On the web, whiteflowerfarm.com.
Timothy Packren, who's known to many of his followers as Mississippi Vegan, the title of his popular 2018 cookbook, his social media handle, and also the URL of his website, describes himself as a vegan from Mississippi living in New Orleans. Besides developing his signature recipes, he's a photographer and a food stylist and also a gardener, thanks to his father, to whom he dedicated the new book, and thanks for giving his son his green thumb, he says. Plus, Timothy will be in conversation with James Beard award-winning cookbook author Amy Chaplin on September 12th in my neighborhood at HGS Home Chef in Hillsdale, New York, and I'll give all the details on that very special event in that very special shop with the transcript of this show over on awaytogarden.com. So meantime, I'm glad to welcome him to the show today. Hi, Timothy. How are you?
Hi, I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. I'm so glad to meet you, and we've talked on the phone, and it was great to finally connect because, of course, I've known about you and followed you on social media and things like that. And I should say, before we get started, we'll have a book giveaway with the about-to-be-published book, Garden Variety, which is just really fun. And so you might be the Mississippi vegan, but you're New Orleans-based since, what, 2018? So just tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. Well, what's funny is I started, I call it a concept, the concept of Mississippi Vegan, when I was living in New York, actually. And I think that was around 2014. And so I created that concept, merging my past of, you know, growing up on the Gulf Coast in Mississippi and close to New Orleans, and then merged it with, you know, my newer journey of being vegan, which I went vegan when I was 20. So it really merged my past and my present, and it actually merged all of my passions in life, because I went to college for studio art, and I was always a passionate cook. And so when I started Mississippi Vegan, it really combined everything that I love: writing, food styling, photography, you know, art in general, and really just working on a body of work. I love curating a collection of things. And so that's why cookbooks are really special to me.
Mm. And they're multi-year projects. It really is like it's not an instant thing. It is like a curation exercise over a period of years.
I was exposed to that in college in studio art. It was, you know, we would work on, I was, you know, introduced to the idea of a body of work. And so, and I call it now, like in this digital age, like an ecosystem, because there's so many things that are connected to it. But cookbooks are definitely my pride and joy and what are most fulfilling to me, just because I love that they're a physical object and they're a tactile experience. And I think people are really craving that because in this digital age, you know.
Definitely. And the new book is called Garden Variety, as I said earlier. And because, you know, that backyard of yours plays a big role in your life and in your cooking. So set the scene quickly for us, just about that, your landscape, your garden. Are you in the city or
Yeah,
what's it like?
I'm in New Orleans. I'm close to City Park, if anyone's been to the city. And we're subtropical, so I'm zone 9B here, and so we do get usually one freeze a year, which, as you know, will set things back. But I actually appreciate a good freeze. I kind of find it like a hard reset. But the point I'm making is that it's subtropical. I have banana trees, I have passion flower vines, and right now I have a ton of okra and eggplant. And so, and then of course I have a huge pollinator garden. I love collecting native wildflowers and host plants for butterflies. So
Yes.
my home and my front garden and back garden definitely stick out on the block. If I were to invite you over, you would definitely be able to pick out my house, because every other house is kind of, a manicured lawn of grass, and I got rid of all my grass, and my front yard has two massive peach trees, and I have a whole bunch of, candlestick senna and all kinds of native flowers. So it's abundant, and it's almost like a jungle vibe, just because New Orleans,
Yeah, of course.
and it's so hot and muggy right now.
Yeah.
It's if you were here, it's like it's whoa. It's like it's kind of feels like a jungle.
Yeah. And now you're making, as when we spoke on the phone recently, you told me you're sort of transitioning to sort of more of a food forest feeling. You have these 12 raised beds, but like what you're describing, it's more. It's more.
Yeah, well, and after having the 12 raised beds, I realized, as much as I love, growing annuals and growing, specialty produce items, I'll always do that. But what I learned after doing that was I would much rather invest my precious real estate, living in a residential neighborhood in New Orleans, to fruit trees and to shrubs
Yes.
that offer, think perennials that I can, maintain and take care of. But once they get a grip, I mean, the peach trees are the best example I have, because now that they are about 5 years old, I literally ate over 200 peaches this year. And what's so nice about it, and I'm sure you can relate as a fellow gardener, is there's something to be said about just being able to go into the garden and harvest and eat something immediately.
Yes.
And as opposed to something like eggplant, which I adore, but it needs a little love. You can't just take a bite out of an eggplant.
Well, you could, but ugh.
Right. So, and I have a whole bunch of really hot peppers right now, and it's so fun and I adore them, but I have way more than I need.
Yes.
But when
Yes.
it comes to peaches or fruit, I'm obsessed with fruit. I love consuming it and it makes me feel good.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of where I'm at now, is
Yeah.
that, yeah.
Yeah. So let's talk about some food. And I'm not a vegan as you are, but I've been a vegetarian for probably 45 years or so. So you'd think all of what's in your cookbook would be familiar-ish turf for me. But many things were really kind of eye-opening, even some really basic things. Like I make rice every single week. I make a pot of rice, except you don't make a pot of rice. You bake your rice. I
I make it.
never. Never th and the proportions of water by comparison to the stovetop method of doing it. Wow. Tell us about that.
I love that. It's so funny, because for the longest time I had a rice cooker, and then it broke, and then I got another rice cooker, and every time I tried to make it on the stovetop, I always just felt like it was a little bit fussy. And I've made it on the stovetop before and had good results. But there's something about baking the rice, I'm telling you. I think because it's exposed to heat all around.
Yes.
And I also love that you can bake it in an all glass vessel, and then whenever you're done, you can just pop it in the fridge, and then whenever you need some, you can just scoop it out. And it's also nice if you need to make like a larger batch. But what I love most about it is you can just pop it in the oven and let it do its thing. And then you have the stovetop to focus on other components of the meal. And so What I always do every week, I usually make a pot of beans on the stovetop, and then I bake a batch of rice, and then I have both of those staples, and then it's really easy to grab both of those from the fridge, throw a spoon, a big spoonful of each into a skillet, and then whatever produce I have on hand, and then you have this wholesome bowl, which is really how I like to eat many of my daytime meals, is like a bowl of wholesome food. You know what I mean?
Well, and as I said quickly before, the proportion, my traditional proportion or what you see in recipe books a lot of times is like 2 to 1 water to rice
It's too
ish.
much water.
And
Make
it's
it
too much water. And
messy.
so yours is like, I think 2.5 cups of water to one
Yes.
cup of to 2 cups of rice. So it's not anywhere near the same proportions. Plus you add in these flavorful little bits and pieces, a little garlic powder, a little something else, a sprig of rosemary,
Bay
a little
leaves,
bit
my
of,
favorite.
bay leaves, red wine, a little bit of red wine vinegar. So it makes a big difference. And it just was like, wow, that sounds really, really, really good. I also loved how you start the book by really taking us through your sort of palette or your whatever of ingredients. And I was also glad that you have a page on your website with specific brands recommended, because as w those of us who use pantry items know, not all brands are created equal, and you can spend a bunch of money on stuff that turns out not to be the best version. But like, for instance, nutritional yeast. So you're vegan, you don't use, say, cheese, and certain other things that might be,
Umami rich.
But you use nutritional yeast in different amounts in different things sometimes, and you like the flakes, not the powder, and you recommend a particular type. I mean, I really appreciated that, and I loved the leafy herbs. Maybe you could just tell us about a couple of those, because some of them I don't even know, like the pandan plant,
Oh yeah,
pandanus or
pandan.
whatever, and
Yeah, so lovely. You know, you can grow it. It has blade-like leaves and it looks similar to a palm, but you can find the leaves in the freezer section of your local Asian market, and it actually freezes really well. But it has the most gorgeous buttery vanilla esque flavor. And let me tell you, baking a batch of rice, you fold in one of those leaves. When you bake the rice, the whole house smells like, and it's just an intoxicating scent. And if you use something like Louisiana popcorn rice, which has a really nutty, buttery flavor, that combined with the pandan, it's unbelievable when you bake it because the whole house just smells like this, intoxicating scent. But
So
yeah.
for people who think like rice is boring, I don't like rice, this is like a whole nother way to look at it. And there's lots of different kinds of rice that you explain. They have different cooking times and different add-ins, that you recommend. And
Yes.
again, this baking process, less water, et cetera. So for instance, the pandan, you also use the curry tree, which I think is Maria is the Latin name for the genus, which is like Murraya. Doesn't look like Maria, but I think it's pronounced Maria. You use makrut lime,
Good time, yeah.
shiso, bay, lemongrass. These are things that we can grow even in our northern gardens, like the various subtropical and tropical woody ones. We can buy them. I mean, like Logies, the plant company in rare plant company in Connecticut, they sell them as small plants. I can grow them all these in a pot. I didn't know about half of these, but they're all available. So it's not just in your zone.
I love
We could
that.
grow them, and we don't need a 10-foot tree of something to have enough for culinary use, right?
No, for sure. That's what I always tell people when they're starting to garden. Like an herb garden is the perfect place to start, just because I find that they're less they're lower maintenance than, say, something like cucumber, tomatoes for me especially. But it's so refreshing to hear this. The book really is not out yet, and so to hear your feedback as a fellow gardener and to say that you're learning things and being inspired is exactly why I wrote the book, and it really touches my heart. So I really appreciate you saying
Oh,
all this.
well, it was fun. It was really because I thought, oh, I'll know all these things.
Yeah, like
But
you,
guess what? I
yeah,
didn't. Like
that's
how to
the
cook
best.
rice. I didn't know how to cook rice.
Well, and when you do bake the rice, what I want to point out is you'll find your oven's sweet spot and with your favorite rice. Like I find that with basmati, like white basmati, I can get away doing that for 25 minutes at 450. But something like a short grain brown rice is going to take a little bit longer. But you'll find your sweet spot. And what's nice about the rice is it's forgiving. So if you take it out and you taste the bite and it's a little al dente, you can pop back in the oven for an additional 5 to 10 minutes. It's just not, it's more forgiving, in my opinion. And so,
Yes.
yes.
And this is in like a covered Pyrex, just so people understand what we're talking about. Generally speaking, that would be an ideal kind of a
Yes.
vessel.
And you can also use a Dutch oven like a Le Creuset. And if you don't have that, you can also, I like to double wrap it with foil if you don't have a tight fitting lid. I actually learned about this from Paul Prudhomme, who is, Paul Prudhomme's one of his first cookbooks. He actually suggested baking the rice in a loaf pan, and he would put minced celery, green bell pepper, and onion, and different Creole spices, and that's the rice that he would serve like with his gumbo. And so that's what really was eye-opening for me. And so I had to play with it and play with the ratio because I found that the cooking time was too long and the water was too much. So I did find the sweet spot with the ratios, but I do want to give him credit because that and he also taught me to use different sources of pepper because and like different sources of heat because they all hit the tongue differently. And I thought that was fascinating. So that's why having paprika, cayenne pepper, and a little bit of a fresh chili and like maybe a pinch of white pepper, then you're getting this like multitude of spice that hits your tongue in a frenzy, and it makes a dish notable.
So I want to talk about a couple of recipes that I noted that are for things that maybe a lot of us are making right now because of what's in our garden, what's in season, so to speak, that you've sort of put a little bit of a spin on. And, I just want, they caught my eye again, like what we've just been talking about. But one was your pesto, the toasted almond pesto, which also has cashews in it, I think. So again, I think pesto, or a lot of people, I'm like basil, oil,
Fine nut.
garlic, and cheese, right? That's but you don't use cheese. So, okay. So what's in your pesto?
So I've been working on this pesto recipe since I started Mississippi Vegan in New York. I remember I would go to the Union Square Green Market all the time, and this one farm had blue spice basil. Have you had that basil?
No.
It's citrusy and pungent, and it just gave me a new appreciation for basil. And so now in my garden, my favorite basil to grow is lemon and lime basil, and they're just so citrusy and fragrant. So that those two basils really inspired my love for making it citrusy. So that's why I like to add lemon zest and lime zest because it really enhances that the citrusy flavor that I think basil has. And you can of course use Genovese, like any basil that you love. But the combination of the toasted almonds with the cashews have a sweetness, and I think it's important to have both of those sources of fat. And so, because there's no cheese, those two nuts offer a nice richness. And you mentioned nutritional yeast, and I know it's a very vegan ingredient, but the reason for that is because I don't use cheese and I don't use butter, and I actually refer to nutritional yeast as like the cousin to salt and pepper for me. It's like the umami version. And so, but when you eat the pesto, I don't use so much that you would be like, this tastes like nutritional yeast. What it does is it offers a well-rounded umami flavor that enhances the pesto. And so, I do love it, and it because it's pantry friendly and you can keep it in a tightly sealed jar. It's a great hack for cooking to make things taste delicious. So yeah, and then the basil, for the pesto, I do call for quite a bit of basil just because it's I think if you're going to get the food processor out, it can be a bit of a production. So I like to make a big batch, and I say this in the head note, like this isn't This isn't the recipe for you to go buy 10 little plastic packs of basil from Whole Foods. That's not the gig. You want to make this when you're either growing basil or you go to the farmer's market and you see a huge bunch of fresh basil. That's when you make this recipe and you make enough to store some in the freezer and then enjoy some and then give some to a friend. And that's really what I want the book to be. I want the book to not be like, you have to have a garden to appreciate this book. I wrote this book to be a kitchen resource for cooking with the seasons. So even if you buy a bunch of basil from the store, from the farmer's market, or you harvest them from your very own garden, I want you to be able to open the book and then feel inspired for what to do with it.
Right. So the last 3 minutes or so, 4 minutes, you know, you have a recipe for roasted tomatoes or cherry tomatoes in the book, and they're slow roasted, 250 degrees on parchment paper or on a baking sheet. It might take up to 2 hours, you say. And then you have this, speaking of the pesto and speaking of those slow roasted cherry tomatoes, you then have this orecchiette, this pasta recipe, pea pesto pasta, which just looks so delicious, right? And you add, I think those two things are in it, and then also peas, yes?
Yes, I love to add peas. They're, you know, a great punch of protein. And I love using like the sugar snap peas too. And I love when a recipe has like a little hack. So when you make the pasta, you can throw in the fresh peas and then frozen peas when the pasta is almost done. And that way you kind of blanch them, get them bright green. Then you drain everything. And what's really special is if you want to make that dish in the winter, you can grab a little container of the frozen pesto and you can throw it into that hot pasta. And then you get to relive the excitement of the summer in a cold, dreary month. And it's so magical when you can grab something from the freezer and throw it into a hot pot of pasta. And then it feels like summer again.
Yeah. No, there are so many great things. I mean, there's crispy polenta, something I used to bake all the time that I now want to start making again. And dal, you have a beautiful dal recipe. And then just in the, you know, one minute version of seed brittle from one of our mutually favorite restaurants from the East Village of New York City years ago, Angelica Kitchen. The seed brittle, just tell us real quick, what is that?
Oh my God, the seed brittle is such a lovely, easy snack. You just combine different seeds. And Angelica had pecans in it, but I wanted to make the recipe nut-free. So it's pumpkin seeds, sunflower seeds. And then I like to do both black and white sesame seeds, but you could just do whatever sesame seeds you can find. And then it's a simple combination of maple syrup. I put a little coconut sugar just because I like the toasty flavor and flaky salt. And the trick with that recipe is you want to pile the mixture into little mounds with space in between them on the baking sheet. And then when you bake it, it melts into this bubbly mass. And it kind of just merges all together.
Right.
And after about 15 minutes, depending on how toasty you want it, once it cools, you can pick up this large sheet of brittle and you can break it up. And what I remember about when I worked at Angelica Kitchen, they would sell little baggies of that brittle. And it was kind of like a hidden item on the menu.
Yes.
Like it was. So it felt like a treat, but people would buy it on their way out as a little sweet bite. And so
it was delicious.
Yeah. So that's why it was special for me. I love to weave in stories from my past into the concept of, you know, whatever cookbook I'm working on. And it just felt like the perfect fit for garden variety.
Well, the cookbook, as you just said, is Garden Variety, Timothy Pecron. We're going to have a book giveaway with a transcript of the show over on awaytogarden.com. I'm glad to speak to you again, and I look forward to seeing you at the event in Hillsdale, which I'll give all the details of, September 12th. And thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay.
It's an honor to be here.
Talk to you soon. And I hope I'll talk to all the rest of you soon again, too. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, and you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com and on Facebook and on Instagram as @awaytogarden. And happy gardening meantime.
Underwriting support for A Way to Garden provided by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulbs, a third-generation bulb company offering top-size flower bulbs directly to landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners. On the web, colorblends.com. And by High Mowing Seeds, Wolcott, Vermont, professional quality vegetable, flower, and herbal seeds that are 100% organic and non-GMO project verified. On the web, highmowingseeds.com. And by White Flower Farm, offering a wide range of carefully selected and expertly grown garden plants. On the web, whiteflowerfarm.com.
Away to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com.